Welcome. You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. My name is Andrew Popel, and the show you are listening to is Final Draft. Final Draft is a half hour of books, writing, and literary culture, a chance on the airwaves to hear from some of your favourite writers, maybe future writers that you are about to love, because we support Australian writers who are established, emerging. I just want to bring you great new books. Now, before we get started on today's show, 2SER has just come out of its supporter drive. That is the chance during the year when we ask you to support and be a part of the 2SER family. You are the community that makes community radio happen, and I want to say huge thank you to everyone who supported during Final Draft. It's so amazing to know that you do support this show, but also to the hundreds of people who supported over the 2 weeks of supporter drive. All of your contributions are going to be keeping us on the air, and for the next year, you're letting us do what we do here, bringing you stories, ideas, music, and of course on Final Draft, books, writing, and literary culture. Now, without any further ado, today I have two great conversations. The first is with Catherine Johnson. Now, we met Catherine last year. Her book Matryoshka took us down to Tasmania and explored Australia as a country of refugees and what it means for the generations of Australians. Her latest book is also going to challenge our ideas and make us think about our country. It is called Paris Savages, and it weaves a narrative around the true story of three Budjula people who travelled to Europe in the 19th century. I cannot wait to present my conversation with Catherine to you. Also this weekend, today in fact is Boundless Festival. It is a festival of Indigenous and culturally diverse writers, and I will be in conversation later on in the show with Winnie Dunn. Winnie is the General Manager of Sweatshop Western Sydney Writing Collective, and Winnie's going to tell us a little bit about Boundless, why you should get down, and what exactly is happening in the world of writing across our city. So that is Final Draft for today. It's a great show. I'm so excited to be here to present it to you, because this is kind of what it's all about for me. Just amazing books. Stay with me. We are going to take a short break, and I'll be back with Catherine Johnson's Paris Savages.
Antenna Documentary Film Festival returns for 2019 with the freshest documentaries from around the world. Expanding to 11 days, Antenna's lineup showcases the funny to the sobering, the real to the surreal. From music documentaries to political exposés and tales of young love to youthful rebellion, Antenna will have your mind reeling long after the credits roll. Antenna Documentary Film Festival, October 17 to 27. Full program and tickets at antennafestival.org. 2SER is a media partner of Antenna.
You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. You're listening to Final Draft, and my name is Andrew Popel. Now, I am joined in the studio by Catherine Johnson. Catherine is the author of four novels. You first met her last year when we discussed Matryoshka on Final Draft, and today she's joining me with her latest novel. It is called Paris Savages. Catherine, welcome. It is so great to have you here.
It's so great to be here in studio with you, looking straight across.
I know, and I'm going to confess, Catherine and I had the chance to meet in her hometown of Hobart last week. So it's been I've been hotly anticipating this conversation. Paris Savages, it tells the story of three Budjula people who leave their home on Gari, or as white colonisers called it, Fraser Island. They travel to Europe in the late 19th century. It's Bonangera, or Bonnie, Girano and Dorandera. They've agreed to travel with Louis Muller to highlight their culture and to petition the English Queen to intervene in the violence and calculated extinction of their people. But of course, as we learn when we read Paris Savages, that becomes what seems an incredibly hopeful mission that they want to accomplish. In Paris Savages, you work within historical events and the biographies of Bonnie, Girano and Dorandera. How did their story first come to your attention?
So a cast had been found of Bonnie in Lyon in the basement of a storage space in a museum, and that was reported on ABC Away, actually, in 2011, a program called Cast Among Strangers, and that went on to win a New York award, actually, that program. So the true story of the three being taken overseas, a lot of that is captured in that documentary. And the idea of that cast of a young Budjula man from 1882 being found in storage in France was just incredibly moving to me. And I hadn't realised, actually, even though human exhibition was a form of mass entertainment in the 19th century, I really hadn't realise the extent of that or that these people had gone across then. And I couldn't help but wonder what on earth that was all about. What was the story behind that? What on earth could that have been like? And, of course, the next step is a tricky one for a writer to work out how to tell that story and how to do that respectfully. I didn't feel like the story should be one that was kept silent any longer either, although, of course, Away did a fantastic job in that documentary. But I felt there was a lot, too, that needed to be told, and the emotion and the fiction lends itself to trying to sometimes look at the silences in history because it's very much a one-sided story.
So let's then come to finding space for narrative voice within the historical record. You utilise a range of narrative voices to move within the narrative. You've created the character of Muller's daughter, and through Hilda's diary, we hear very much, I guess, our perspective on the story, as diaries will tend to be. You also have the spirit of Christelle, Muller's wife, and she becomes a sort of an omnipresent guide and can very much take us into spaces that we would not otherwise have access. What were the concerns, though, that you had and the concerns that you felt you needed to balance in telling this story, a story where there are many voices and voices that perhaps you need to skirt around the use of?
Yeah, so telling the story and point of view is something that's just so central to this story, well, to many stories. But how to do this one as a non-Indigenous person, non-Aboriginal person, was something I gave an awful lot of thought to. And I spoke to a bachelor academic and artist really early in the process and talked to her about it too. And I felt the best way to do it was to not take an Aboriginal viewpoint. And I didn't feel really equipped to do that, to be honest. I was pointed to a book of legends by this Aboriginal bachelor lady and was able to receive permission to quote a few of those in the book. And that's an authentic bachelor voice that I feel very fortunate to have been able to put into the book. But I didn't want to put myself as a first person or to create a first person voice for Bonnie Deronda or Girano. For the book, it had to be. There are so many silences in the story. I actually went and saw the cast of Bonnie and Leon, and that's what struck me. You know, what if that cast could speak? What stories would it have to tell? And so the silences in the story are what I really want to illuminate. The idea that there are other stories that we don't know about, and we can only really wonder what they were.
Now, on arrival in Hamburg, the trio, so Bonnie, Girano, and Dorandera, they're set to perform at the Tierpark, I think I pronounced that correctly.
Yes. Mm.
All our German listeners, I apologise, of Karl Hagenbach. Now, the park and its environment, they're set up in contrast, or Hagenbach talks about the contrast, and it's mentioned with the American shows of P.T. Barnum, who we probably know more immortalised as the greatest showman. But in Paris Savages, you show us the perspective of him as an arrant exploiter, particularly of the people that he brings into his shows. What do we know about these travelling exhibitions and the public's demand for these spectacles? Because I feel like it would have been a very much recursive process. People were demanding this. It wasn't just that these spectacles were dropped on their laps.
No, and they grew and they grew and they grew. So they became enormous. And at the time where the Bachelor Trio went across, they were just starting to gain a foothold. They became much larger than that. So my research actually turned into a PhD, and I learnt through that there were 35,000 performers from around the world who were shown during the period of these human zoos, some call them. So the 19th century and up until the 1950s, in fact. And they were seen by a billion spectators. So that's where I think they were very important in terms of people forming these stereotypes about race that then need to be contested. So, and Barnum in The Greatest Showman is a very sanitised version of Barnum for certain. And it's known that there were two other groups of Aboriginal people taken from Palm and Hinchinbrook Island in Queensland, further north, who were taken by Barnum to America and then to Europe. And they definitely weren't treated very well.
You are listening to Final Draft, and I'm speaking with Catherine Johnson. Her latest novel is Paris Savages, and we are discussing the historical story that Catherine has fictionalised, and we're looking at the legacy of these travelling shows. They were often called anthropological zoos, which is just a horrid, horrid term. But I think as much as we can look at the history of it, there's also something that we need to examine as modern-day readers and listeners of their legacy. And so one of the things that I saw in Paris Savages is this journey, this wonderful, heartbreaking journey. And it made me think about where we are today. What can you tell us about the legacy of these shows for ideas that are still pervasive? Can we truly appreciate the damage that was done by this sort of popular propagation of these very racist ideas that happened in the pseudoscience you mentioned?
Yeah, so I do think those shows were quite important in setting those ideas in people's mind, and I think they continue. I saw Adam Good's film, The Australian Dream, on the weekend, and that was reinforced to me even again, although I've followed that story over the last few years. But seeing it there and seeing the crowd response, the camera work, and that was often looking back into the crowd, and that ugly crowd sort of roaring and howling, made me think of the way people other people. And I think that's really relevant still in society today.
So one thing that I found, you read a book like Paris Savages, it is some 140 odd years on from the historical events that you're weaving your narrative through. And so we as readers have some understanding, if not how this particular story of three people is going to end, but how the broader narrative, particularly within Australia, is going to go. So it's really hard to hear Bonnie's hope that he is going to arrive in England, that he's going to be able to petition the Queen, that he is going to be able to make meaningful change for his people within his lifetime. I also learned from reading your afterword that the Budjula people were granted native title to Tagari in 2014, but we can also see that there is so much still to be done. What has creating this story shown you about reconciling with history, or can we reconcile with history? What work needs to be done?
I think there's so much work that needs to be done. That's such an enormous question. I think the silences in history need to be reviewed. I think there do need to be, obviously, lots of stories too that are told by Aboriginal people themselves. I don't think that non-Aboriginal people should be left off the hook, though. I think they need to do work too in terms of post-colonialism or decolonising our history or our stories and try and, well, this, as I hope this book does, shine a light on the fact that there are parts of our history that we've sort of been given one glance at, which is a very Eurocentric one, and that if we'd had another side of the story, like a contesting side of the story earlier, maybe some of those stereotypes would have been contested a whole lot earlier, and maybe that would have led to a different outcome.
Yeah, decolonizing narratives and having a chance to hear. But probably the flip of that is also having an audience that will listen seem to be perhaps in incipient steps that we should be making. I'm speaking with Catherine Johnson, who is probably questioning whether she will ever come back on the show with that last question I threw at her, which is nothing greater or smaller than, let's solve this today. Of course, we can't do that, but we can read a book like Paris Savages. And Catherine, thank you so much for taking the time to answer my questions.
Thank you for your close reading of the book. And yeah, I hope fiction somehow brings a different sense to this history.
You are on 2SER 107.3, and this is Final Draft. That was Catherine Johnson discussing her latest novel, Paris Savages. My name is Andrew Popel. Thank you for joining me. I love talking books, writing, and literary culture with you. Paris Savages is out right now, and it is a fantastically thought-provoking book, so I really recommend you reading it. Now, I do have a conversation coming up with Sweatshop Western Sydney Writing General Manager Winnie Dunn. we're going to be talking about Boundless Festival, which is kicking off right now. It's going all day, so I'm going to give you some reasons to get down and check it out. But to get us to that conversation, this is a new Sydney singer-songwriter. It is Moody Beach, and the track is Elegy. You're tuned in to 2SER 107.3, and this is Final Draft. Right there we heard from Sydney singer-songwriter Moody Beach, and that track was called Elegy. My name is Andrew Popel. Now, Boundless Festival it's a festival of Indigenous and culturally diverse writers, and the festival will be happening on Saturday, October 26, at Bankstown Arts Centre. It's presented by Writing New South Wales, Bankstown Arts Centre, and is in association with Sweatshop. Joining me today to talk about the festival is Winnie Dunn. Winnie is a Tongan Australian writer from Mount Druitt. She's the general manager of Sweatshop, the Western Sydney Writers Movement. Winnie's also going to be appearing at the festival, so she is just a fantastic person to let us know about Boundless. Welcome, Winnie. Thank you so much for joining me.
No, thank you for having me.
Now, this is the second Boundless Festival. You were also on the lineup for the first one. What can people expect on the day?
I think people can expect kind of Australia's most diverse and most Indigenous literary scene. You know, a lot of those kinds of literatures are always pushed to the side or not very seen or not very heard. And so Boundless is one way that Writing New South Wales and Sweatshop have come together to showcase the diversity of Australian literature. And so I think it's going to be a really exciting event.
Now, here at Final Draft, we love Sweatshop and we love all the work you do. But I don't want to presume, because people are going to be discovering this for the first time. Can you tell me a little bit about Sweatshop and the work that Sweatshop does?
Yeah, so Sweatshop is a Western Sydney literacy movement run by myself and Dr. Michael Muhammad Ahmed. And what we do is we bring together Indigenous and culturally and linguistically diverse writers to come together through writing workshops to train up in the art of creative writing and then to kind of showcase their work. And so Sweatshop is built on the foundations of African-American feminist and writer Bell Hooks, who says degrees of literacy determine how we see what we see. And so what we try to do is empower kind of diverse writers who are on the margins to come to centre.
So Boundless started in 2017. Sweatshop's been around for a bit longer than that.
Yes.
It's a festival of diverse writers. Now, Well, the likes of Benjamin Law, who's going to be on the lineup of artists this year, they're fast becoming household names. How do you feel, though, Australia is going in terms of recognising the diversity of voices and the diversity of voices telling stories from diverse communities across the country?
Yeah, well, I mean, you mentioned earlier that Dr. Michael Muhammad Ahmed was shortlisted for the Miles Franklin. And, you know, the Miles Franklin winner this year was, you know, Aboriginal writer Melissa Lukashenko. And so I think Australia's literary culture is starting to realise the importance of diverse writing. We still have a long way to go. I mean, Sweatshop's been around for about 10 years now. And only now have we seen a small momentum of interest in diverse writers, and not only diverse in culture, but also diverse in ages and sexuality and classes. And so when all of those intersections come together, I think there's a contribution to knowledge to Australian literature that hasn't been heard before. And so I think even though it's been moving and you know, we're seeing winners like Alexis Wright, who won the Stella Prize, I still feel like there's definitely a long way to go. And so, you know, Sweatshop is just one avenue where emerging writers have access to Australia's literary world and have access to improve their writing.
And, of course, at Boundless, you're going to be moderating a panel on the Sweatshop Women collection. The panel features Divya Venkataraman, Ferdows Baha, Jeanette Chen and Phoebe Grainer, who have contributed to the collection. The book is described as groundbreaking, but I was hoping you could tell me a little bit about where a book like this sits in Australia's literary tradition, and also the voices of women that we can appreciate have always been telling stories, but are so often not being heard.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the Sweatshop Women anthology sits in Australia's kind of literary scene in terms of the Growing Up series. So there's the Growing Up Aboriginal in Australia, Growing Up Asian in Australia, and then there's Arab Australian Other, for instance. There's Growing Up African Australian. And so I think Sweatshop Women sits in that because it's about women of colour in Australia telling their own stories and reclaiming their own stories and telling stories that are both fiction and autobiographical, which is the genre autobiographical fiction, where they get to reclaim their own narratives, but also revel in the art of fiction making. And so, you know, on the panel at Boundless, Ferdows Baha wrote a really amazing story about going to a law firm interview, but because she wears the hijab, she was asked very personal questions throughout the interview about her religion. And, you know, that was quite striking to see in an anthology because Australia is still yet to have an abundance of literature written by women who wear the hijab. And so for somebody like Ferdows, who's a Bengali Australian writer from Minto in Campbelltown, to kind of write that interaction is kind of the first time Australian literature has ever seen that story.
In some conceptions, for some people, Australian storytelling is from the beach to the bush. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a configuration that literally kind of jumps over Western Sydney.
Absolutely.
Very conveniently. Is it that we're filling in the blanks, or are we really looking to a space where we are reconfiguring, we're reconceptualising, and we're looking at stories we haven't heard that exist now and looking at how far back storytelling extends?
Yeah, absolutely. We're all I would argue that all culturally and linguistically diverse writers and Indigenous writers come from a history of oral storytelling. And so a lot of our cultures, I mean, Tongans have it, we call them bunakes, which means storytellers through both song, dance, through song and dance. So for me, that's that history in Sweatshop Women, where the women are writing from. But in terms of now, I think you're definitely right. I think kind of the mainstream Australian literature conveniently blows over Western Sydney, and only in very recent years have we seen an emergence of writing from Western Sydney, which I think is really important. I mean, the concept of mirroring, and the importance of that is that when a young person picks up a book or watches a movie, the concept of mirroring is that they find that that book or that movie important because they see themselves in it. And so an anthology like Sweatshop Women, and in fact all of the anthologies that Sweatshop produces, is about that concept of mirroring, is about being able to create stories where kind of the younger generation of culturally and linguistically diverse and Indigenous writers from Western Sydney begin to see themselves. And so not only does Sweatshop do that with kind of older emerging writers, we also run workshops with Western Sydney high schools. And so we try to get as much of a broad range of emerging writers as possible, because that aspect of mirroring is so important. If we begin to put into the Australian literary scene pieces of literature that mirror the aspects of people of colour and Indigenous people living in Western Sydney, then the movement starts happening where those kind of disadvantaged people start to believe that, oh, yeah, there is something like me that's already out there that I can contribute to, which I think is a really phenomenal concept. Because for me, as a Tongan Australian writer, the only mainstream representation that I have is Chris Lilly, who's a white guy who does brown face and puts on an afro and enacts these really kind of racist and sexist portrayals of Pacific Islanders in Australia. And so if that's the only concept of mirroring that I have, you know, how can somebody like me feel like they can become a writer or an actor? Yeah, so I think that's the most important thing when picking up a Sweatshop book and thinking about Australian literature, is what is it mirroring, and is it mirroring some of the most disadvantaged people in Australia, and is that important? I think those are the questions we need to be asking.
Mm. And so at Boundless, we have this opportunity for people to look at Australia more fully than perhaps they are seeing in their everyday. And it's a full-day festival. It's across four stages. If people want to find out more, they can check out boundlessfestival.org.au, or they just Google Boundless Festival. I was hoping, though, Winnie, like there's so much on, and people are literally not going to be able to see everything. Can you have a highlight? Can you recommend, like, do not miss?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you come to Boundless, be sure not to miss out the panel of Sweatshop Women, which will be chaired by myself, and I'll be in conversation with four of kind of the most exciting Indigenous and culturally and linguistically diverse women writers in Australia right now, I think, who are emerging. The second event I want to promote is Sex, Drugs and Pork Rolls, which is a and Sex, Drugs and Pork Rolls is a script that was co-written by myself, Mariam Azam, Stephen Pham and Shirley Lee, and they will be read by actors on the day in kind of this very special one-off performance reading.
I am pretty sure that Sex, Drugs and Pork Rolls is on at 5 o'clock, so it's sort of closing out the day. Mm-hmm. I am speaking with Winnie Dunn. She is the general manager of Sweatshop, and we are discussing Boundless. It is a free festival. If you want to find out more about the things that are on and what time, it's running from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Bankstown Arts Centre, and all of that information is at boundlessfestival.org.au. We will, of course, get these links up on the social media. Hope to see you down there, and check out Winnie's panels. She's got some absolutely astounding work, and I really appreciate, Winnie, that you've taken the time to come in and talk to us.
No worries. Thanks so much. I hope to see you all there.
And Boundless is on right now, so no excuses. You've got the whole day to check out different events. If you want to know what time anything is on, as I said before, boundlessfestival.org.au. We'll also stick that up on the social media. If you're just tuning in, this is Final Draft on 2SER 107.3, although only for a few minutes longer. Now, of course, you don't have to miss out. You can go to you can go to 2SER.com/Final Draft and listen back to the show. You can catch us. We're actually on twice a week, so you can also also catch the show on Wednesday night and Saturday morning. Whenever you want to tune in and more ways to listen, the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast goes up every week and it is longer, more complete conversations. If you want to hear a little bit more from Winnie about the cultural impact of Western Sydney writing, if you want to hear more from Catherine Johnson about her research into the book Paris Savages, it is up now on the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast. Wherever you get your podcasts, I mean, really, any old phone, there is an app and you can download it, you can subscribe. Give us a rating. That is a great way for other people to discover the books that you are loving. My name is Andrew Popel, and thank you again for letting me do this. Thank you again to everyone who called up and became a supporter during Supporter Drive. Your financial support lets us keep doing this. Don't forget, you can follow us on all of the social medias, Twitter, Instagram, Final Draft, if you want to find more books, writing, and literary culture. Till next week, happy reading.